I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are author Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and author Arsalan Iftikhar, Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre, and the former lieutenant governor of Maryland, the former chair of the Republican National Committee, Michael Steele. Hey, take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas, welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey.
Yo, what's up?
I'm good. I don't need to took a little bit too much off the top, but
I can't believe this. We got A Train, we got P Dog, and we got the Man of Steel. First time
Man
in.
Man of Steel.
Well, it's a real pleasure and honor to be here.
Welcome to the shop.
Good to be here.
Listen, let's get things started off with one of the worst scandals ever in college football that led to football powerhouse Penn State actually firing legendary coach Joe Paterno. According to reports, Penn State's former defensive coordinator Jerry Sandusky is charged with sexually abusing boys for more than a decade. The details are still developing, but the allegations are heinous and hard to hear, Michelle.
I think this is a good place to say that, you know, this part of the conversation might not be appropriate for everybody, so if there are young ears, you know, use discretion. But for those who are not familiar with the details, current Penn State receivers coach Mike McQueary testified when he was a graduate student assistant that he personally witnessed an assault in the shower. And McQueary said that he told Paterno all about it. Paterno informed his bosses, but he did not call the police.
And Michelle, for all the outrage about the scandal on campus, lots of folks at Penn State are mad about the firing of the man they call Jopa. Students rioted on Wednesday night and early Thursday morning, and the university says threats have been made ahead of tomorrow's game. McQueary will not be on the sidelines tomorrow because of those threats. The governor has made a statement. Michelle, we got some tape.
Yeah, we do. Here's Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett during a press conference yesterday. He's specifically addressing the violence that by some students on campus. Here it is.
I believe in your right to assemble and your right to express your opinions. I do not believe, nor do I think anybody believes, in your right to violence. There is no such thing.
Wow. Thanks for that, Michelle. Now, some Penn State critics are calling for the death penalty for that football program. Essentially, that means the NCAA would ban the school from competing in that sport for at least 1 year. So far, the NCAA president, Mark Emmert, he says, well, they're just monitoring what's going on and not making any judgments yet. And, Pablo, yeah. Listen, you're our main sports guy. What should the NCAA do?
I mean, what the NCAA should do is almost a secondary question to me. I mean, the death penalty, for context, was applied to schools like SMU was the last big example in the 80s when they were rife with NCAA college football-specific violations, meaning boosters paying off players. To be clear, this is in a whole different universe. I mean, we can take the perhaps out of perhaps the worst scandal in college sports. At least in my mind, this is, period, the worst scandal in college sports. And the NCAA, I mean, if they were to take away college football from Penn State for up to 5 years, up to 2 years, whatever they can do, that's fine with me just because this is a problem that so blew the minds of everybody who pays attention to this sport. I mean, for context, Joe Paterno was the saint of college sports. He was there for 45 years. And not only was he the most sainted college football coach ever, he was the most powerful man at that university. I mean, it's telling all these riots. They're not rioting about the president of the university being fired. They're rioting about their football coach who was there for decades and decades and built this campus up on a hill, as it was for so many. And so for that to go on under their noses for decades, and for Joe Paterno to have been directly informed of at least one case, allegedly, in 2002, and perhaps another one in 1998, is just absurd, and it defies any sort of boundaries we sort of had in terms of what could go wrong in college football.
You know, I'm really interested to hear you say that this isn't really about football, because we had this very interesting debate in the office about this, where the conversation, and I don't want to call names here, but the conversation was about, well, what would Joe Paterno's legacy be? And I don't care.
Right. Who cares? I mean, exactly.
You know, Governor, Mr. Chairman, what about you? I mean, do you care?
I don't give a rat's you know what about that. what bothers me the most is that you have young boys who were abused within a system that benignly neglected their responsibility to go to the appropriate authorities. Who gives a hoot about your boosters and the impression that's going to be created, the scandal at the time? What's worse, the scandal now or the scandal then? Do you want a scandal around the idea that you caught someone doing something inappropriate with young boys, or do you want the scandal of having done nothing about that? And that's what they're faced with. So I think they strip the program completely. I think they shut it down. I think they do a full board investigation throughout the university to see how far this thing reaches, who knows, who knew what when. And I don't think you play football there until this thing is cleaned up, because they've got, you think they've got a problem now? Wait till those 8 or 9 parents decide to bring the civil suit that will come. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Catholic Church has already spent close to $2 billion since the 1990s in dealing with this type of litigation. And so this is something that is going to have a long-term ripple effect. Every dollar that comes into this university is going to go to those kids in the future.
Can I just ask you briefly, because I know the other guys want to weigh in here, but Mr. Chairman, you were trained as a seminarian
Augustinian friar
in the Catholic Church, and I wondered if you have any. Can you even put your mindset in Mike McQuarrie's place?
Yeah, I can. I'm glad you asked that, because I thought about that, because what you're seeing here is it's a generational difference. Our sensitivities have been heightened since the 1980s, the 1990s, about this kind of abuse, similar to how we've now come to appreciate spousal abuse and other types of abuse that goes on within families and communities. Institutional neglect of these types of issues is historic. I mean, it's not something that's a recent thing. So I think what you see at one level, not to excuse it in no way, but you see an institution, paternal, you know, older gentlemen, these types of issues, or, you know, we just kind of sweep it under the carpet. I told the president of the university, or I told the closest internal authorities, and let them handle it. The sense that you have an obligation to go beyond those internal authorities to the real authorities who can do something about this just isn't in place.
No. Arsalan? Yeah.
Well, you know, what boggles my mind is, you know, Mike McQuarrie, who's now the wide receivers coach, you know, when he was a graduate assistant, he was 28 years old, on a Friday night walks into the locker room, and he sees 60-year-old Sandusky taking a shower with a 10-year-old boy having sex with him, and had to go home and ask his dad what to do. I mean, for me, that boggles my mind.
Troubling.
Like, if it was a 10-year-old girl, would he have to run home and ask his dad whether to report it or not? And so, you know, I read the 23-page indictment word for word. It is absolutely mind-boggling. You know, in 1998, Sandusky said that he was going to promise to stop taking showers with children. I mean, that should be the one strike and you're out. I mean, the fact that this was allowed to happen.
That should be a clue that you have a problem. Oh, I promise not to do this.
Yeah.
Anymore.
As a father, too, I must tell you, as a parent, I am so struggling with myself not to make judgments about, because I feel that, you know, about everybody involved. Because as a parent, if this was my child and I knew that another adult male, they're apparently a janitor, too, observe this and did nothing to help my child. I don't know.
So you got all these people that witnessed this. Right. And, you know, mores change, to your point, Man of Steel, but wrong is still wrong.
Wrong is still wrong.
Isn't it?
Exactly.
I mean, you know something's wrong with that picture. If you walk in the shower and you see this going on, so this was some cause for alarm. This wasn't a cause to go home and have a thoughtful moment. You know, and that's so troubling to me, that that's the world we're living in anymore, where people have to go home and consort with people about what's wrong, It's clearly wrong,
but
man.
But I don't know that that is the world we're living in. The only piece I want to add about this, and I just want to get feedback, because the chairman said he thinks they should shut the program down. I'm curious about what the rest of you guys think. But for every one of these, I still go back to all the times that people do intervene when they didn't have to, that we never hear about. So I did want to sort of give an opportunity. I'm thinking about an incident when my car in that terrible snowstorm last year ran into a ditch in the middle of the night. I was 6 hours trying to get home. And a stranger came along who, you know, drove me home and realized I was frightened to get into the car with him. Like, who wouldn't be in a dark street 11 o'clock at night? Right. Who put me on the phone with his wife so that I could be reassured. I mean, you know, and my kids are home in a cold, dark house. I mean, you know what I mean? You can imagine. And I'm not a child, obviously. But so I'm thinking, yes, while I'm really struggling here, I'm thinking of all the people who have stepped up who've never been recognized right. for it, so I don't want to keep that in mind. But anyway, Arsalan, briefly, everybody, do you think, like Chairman said, shut it down? Arsalan, yes or no?
Hell yes.
Jimmy?
Absolutely, shut it down.
Pablo?
I mean, for now, I would say that I would completely agree with that. You know, this is a failure of leadership. You know, I mean, it's worth stressing also Penn State, 40,000 students there. I mean, so many good people there who had nothing to do with this. But the people at the top, that slate needs to be wiped clean.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop with author Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and author Arsalan Iftikhar, Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre, and the former lieutenant governor of Maryland, the former chair of the Republican National Committee, Michael Steele. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Okay. Now, I know you're going to get a lot of traction on our next topic, Michael. Not for nothing. It's how Texas governor and presidential candidate Rick Perry stepped in it.
Oh,
those were his words during a debate on Wednesday. Michelle, we got a clip, yeah?
I do. And this is, okay, we're... You know,
it's
where
painful.
To you. To you. Not to everyone, I think. Here it is. He was talking about his plans to shrink the federal government. He says, look, if I'm in there, this is what happens. And he got a little stuck. Here's the tape.
It's three agencies of government when I get there that are gone. Commerce, education, and the, what's the third one there? Let's see.
You need five.
Oh, five. Okay. So commerce, education, and
EPA?
EPA. There you go. No, okay.
Let's talk deposition.
Seriously?
See, but who you heard there was Ron Paul trying to help him out.
Yeah.
So it's like Ron leading the naked.
And CNBC moderator John Harwood saying, like, really?
Wow. Thanks, Michelle. Perry spent almost a minute trying to come up with that answer, but he couldn't. He spent Thursday morning trying to explain that to every network but BET. Now, he even went on Letterman last night with the top list of reasons for the flub, but a lot of folks are saying, you know, it's too late for his campaign, and I'm one of those people. You know, I'm one of those. If you're not good at something, and it's clear and apparent you're not good at something, at a certain point, you just embarrass yourself by going on. You know, it's kind of like watching them together, all respect due. It's kind of like George Jefferson and Mr. Willis. You know, you know what I mean? It's a real mess.
It's a real mess.
Yeah, come on, Michael. So, why don't you chime in here, man?
I'll tell you, I remember watching that, and it's one of those moments that slows time.
Yeah. Right.
And you're sitting there, and you're going, oh, my God. Shut up. Just drop it. Move on. And you could hear, if you go back and you play the tape, you can hear some of the other candidates going, oh my. You know, just like, oh, just stop. And it's unfortunate. And everyone's had that. I mean, you know, I'm sure we've, in our various responsibilities in life, at public moment, froze. But that's okay if you're talking about something. If I'm talking something here that our you know activists have done, you know Arshad's done, others have done, but this is your plan.
Yeah,
this is your thing.
Exactly. Is this disqualifying?
Yeah, it's not disqualifying. I think it's cumulative. And cumulatively speaking, if people have a judgment. Now, keep in mind that Rick Perry was on the slowdown with the base, given his policy positions on immigration. So that bleed had already begun. I think more broadly speaking, the public now looking at the totality of his presentation have been, how should we put it, underwhelmed. And I think that in terms of the campaign, it's kind of the last nail in the coffin.
Speaking of the disqualifying, though, I have to ask you about Herman Cain since we have you here.
Sure.
Because there have been...
It's an issue.
He seems to feel like nobody's allowed to talk about it.
I think folks need to understand that there are two approaches here. And we judge against one and don't really understand the other. We're typically used to a politician coming out, getting caught in the situation, and I'm thinking most immediately of Mr. Wiener, former Congressman Wiener, who, you know, they kind of do the backstroke and they kind of, you know, look at the landscape and try to figure out who does this impact, how does it impact me, the votes, the whole thing. You're dealing with a businessman. He is only accountable to one group of people, and that's his shareholders. And so his approach is going to be, look, we dealt with this inside. I don't know what the big deal is. I'm moving on. And that's what you're seeing from Herman. He's not bringing that political acumen to the situation, which is a good thing in the sense that it revs up the base and they're fired up to see him being so stern and domineering in this. But it's bad because the perception is the lack of sensitivity to the women, et cetera.
Mm. Arsene, you're a civil rights attorney. I'm interested in how you... Your explanation makes sense to me.
You know, what's interesting to me is the hiring of a very, very prominent celebrity lawyer named Lynn Wood as his attorney. Now, for those of us in the legal profession who know Lynn Wood is actually one of the preeminent defamation and libel lawyers in the country. He's formerly represented the JonBenet Ramsey's parents, the Kobe Bryant accuser, Richard Jewell, who was mm-hmm. accused of the 1996 Atlanta Olympic Park bombing. And I think that was done with a bit of strategery. I think that, you know, essentially... Herman Cain was, you know, maybe sending a not-so-subtle message to any potential accusers out there or the ones who have already come out that says, listen, if you're going to keep up with this, you might see a defamation libel.
But
absolutely,
sauce, but
no
sauce
doubt.
For the goose, sauce for the gander. I mean, if you're going to criticize one woman for having Gloria Allred at her side,
then
let's not have opinions when Herman Cain
right, celebrity lawyer
has
celebrity
another lawyer at his
side.
But
that's exactly the case. But and here's where I then go after that. If I make that move, and I'm so adamant, as I have been publicly on this, if I'm Herman Cain, then the first thing I do is I bring a lawsuit because you've already been libeled, you've already been defamed. So if these allegations, as you've stated, are patently false, that they are lies, that they're political in nature, et cetera, then sue. Then bring the lawsuit now. Because that, I mean, just hiring the lawyer, yeah, that may send some signal. But the real signal is sent if you are wholly right in your your stance to take that next step and bring the suit.
Jimmy, you want to weigh in on that?
Well, I don't know. This has been one of the best political races in my lifetime. You know, I like this kind of theater, so I want to see how it shakes out. But I mean,
but on the other hand, a lot of people say, well, what else isn't getting? That's an interesting question of whether this is worthy or not worthy. I know that Condoleezza Rice, former Secretary of State, said, "Excuse me, where's the foreign policy conversation?
We right. yes. mm-hmm.
Where is that?" Pablo, before we let you go, do you want to weigh in on this? How does Herman?
Yeah.
Since this is not your area, you know, this
no,
is
well,
your
I,
arena
I,
is different.
It's sport. It's kind of sport.
It is sport.
Briefly,
as the average American. I mean, it's existential, right? Like, why are these people the best that we can produce? Why are we watching Herman Cain and Rick Perry having to deal with all of this? Isn't this, you know, are these the best and brightest in the country? And that's something that I think a lot of people are wondering about.
Pablo for president.
No.
Pablo Torre is a reporter for Sports Illustrated. He joined us from our NPR studios in New York. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and author of the book, The Denzel Principle. Arsalan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney, founder of themuslimguide.com, and author of Islamic Pacifism, Global Muslims in the Post-Osama Era. And Michael Steele is the former chair of the Republican National Committee and a columnist for TheRoot.com. That's an online publication. They, Jimmy, Arsalan, and Michael here with me in our DC studio. Thank you all.
Oh, pleasure.
Peace.
Yep,
thank
yep.
you.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.